Our next case of the morning is number 06-4281, the United States against Harlan. Ms. Cook.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Blackington. I represent Kenneth Harlan. Mr. Harlan entered a guilty plea to six counts of possession, distribution, and conspiracy to possess and distribute methamphetamine in exchange for a sentence of 240 months. The plea agreement into which he entered reserved to him the right to appeal the district court's denial of his motion to suppress an incriminating statement which he made in April of 2005. Mr. Harlan's position with respect to that motion to suppress, he predicated his motion on an argument that the statement which he made to law enforcement officers was not preceded by a recitation of his rights under Miranda versus Arizona, and that the setting in which he made his incriminating statement was analogous to a custodial setting, and that therefore the absence of the Miranda warnings entitled him to suppress his incriminating remarks. The district court denied his motion to suppress, finding that although the interrogation was not preceded by a recitation of his rights under Miranda, that it was not a custodial interrogation and the warnings were unnecessary. Of course, the benchmark case here is Miranda versus Arizona, which does require warnings prior to a law enforcement initiated interrogation where the defendant is either in custody or otherwise deprived of his freedom in some significant way. This court has held that a restraint on freedom must be analogous to the degree associated with a formal arrest. So the question here is, to what extent was Mr. Harlan's freedom of movement constrained at the time he made his incriminating statements? The court has held previously that this question is to be asked from the perspective of a reasonable person standing in Mr. Harlan's shoes, and the question is, how would that person understand the situation? It's an objective standard. This court, in its previous decisions, notably in Sprosty versus Buckler in 1996, pointed out a number of factors that are important in analyzing such a situation. One of them is the degree of law enforcement control over the defendant's environment and whether the control over the environment is such that a reasonable person in the defendant's position would not believe that he was free to leave. Secondly, whether the defendant in that situation was removed from the area in which he had previously been to a separate area for questioning.
There appears to be no question that your client was moved from his furniture store to the car of the officers.
Yes, sir.
Proceeded to a residential neighborhood, parked against the curb someplace, and they had their chat. The officers give a reason for this. They say they wanted to talk to him in private. They didn't want to be interrupted in the store because they were seeking, in effect, his collaboration with them. Was that ever communicated to your client before he left the store or any time when he was in the vehicle with the officers? Was that reason ever communicated to your client, that he knew why the conversation was going to take place where it did take place?
The testimony differs on that point. But even the law enforcement officer, Detective Holt, who initially approached Mr. Harlan in his furniture store, said that he spoke to him only for about a minute and a half to 2 minutes before he escorted him out of the store. And although he gave him the option of going elsewhere, he did not tell him what the nature of their conversation was to be. He identified himself as a law enforcement officer and said he wanted to talk to him and would he accompany him somewhere else.
Did he ask him if he wanted to lock the door? Close the store?
Again, there was a dispute with respect to that language. Mr. Harlan testified that he was directed to close the store and lock the door. Detective Holt testified that he gave Mr. Harlan the option of locking the store. I think that, you know, in this situation, there's nobody else present. You suddenly have three police officers converging on Mr. Harlan and his store, initially acting as though they're customers, and then Mr. Harlan is confronted within a very brief period of time with the knowledge that these are, in fact, law enforcement officers wanting to question him, you know, about some matter which is not identified until after he is already in their vehicle.
Did the district court speak at all to this issue in ruling on the matter?
The district court credited Detective Holt's testimony on that.
Which was?
Two. Which was that he had given Mr. Harlan the option of locking up the store, and Mr. Harlan elected to have the conversation with law enforcement officers in a different location.
That he elected to have it someplace else?
Yes.
Was he ever given the reason why it should not take place in the store?
I think implicit in that discussion was the belief that other people might come into the store, and there was both Mr. Harlan and Detective Holt testified that there was some brief discussion about whether someone else might arrive. I mean, it was a business that was open, and apparently someone who worked with Mr. Harlan might be arriving. There was no discussion about whether Mr. Harlan was a target at that time, a suspect in any criminal activity, or whether law enforcement was in fact going to ask him for his cooperation. Those facts became known only after Mr. Harlan left the store in the company of the police officers. Another coercive fact here is that the officers required Mr. Harlan to accompany them in their vehicle. His vehicle was at the store. He could easily have followed them to another location, but he was in fact directed to get into their vehicle with three police officers. They drove off to another area. He was clearly moved to another area where he was completely in an environment that was controlled by the law enforcement officers.
Did he ask to take his own car?
He did not make that request. He testified that he felt as though he didn't have the right to do that. He did testify that he asked which vehicle was going to be taken, and he was directed to get in their vehicle. Detective Holt.
But he did not ask to take his own.
That's correct. Detective Holt also testified that Mr. Harlan was not given the option of taking his own vehicle, but was directed to get into the SUV. So we have a situation where he's removed from his business. He's taken in the law enforcement vehicle to a residential neighborhood where he is questioned over a period of time after having been told that he is viewed as a suspect and a suspect who is the target of an investigation into a drug dealing activity. He's told that...
In the vehicle where he was he seated in the front seat or the back seat?
He was seated in the back seat together with
the
law enforcement.
Was there an officer on either side of him in the back seat to restrain him?
No, Your Honor. There was an officer seated next to him, and the other two officers were in the front seats of the vehicle. He testified that he did not believe that he had the right to leave. I think that is also evidenced by the fact that at one point in time he asked if he could make a telephone call to his wife, and was told by the officers that he would not be permitted to do so. I think his belief that he could not leave was objectively reasonable given the circumstances and the locale of his questioning. The district court erred in denying his motion to suppress, and Mr. Harlan requests that this court reverse the decision of the district court, remand the case to the district court with the direction to grant his motion to suppress evidence and allow the withdrawal of his guilty plea. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. We'll hear now from Mr. Blackington.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is, of course, one of those issues where there is a split standard of review. The factual findings rendered by the court are reviewed pursuant to the clear error standard, and this court should only reverse those factual findings when the court credits exceedingly improbable testimony.
I didn't hear what you said at the end.
Only when the district court credits exceedingly improbable testimony should this court reverse the factual findings of the judge. Then once we determine what the factual findings are, we apply those to the question of whether he's in custody with the de novo standard of review. This case, it's something that plays out in the streets every day, these types of encounters between police officers and targets of investigations. The district court in this case credited the testimony of Detective Holt, who said that he went into Kenny Harlan's furniture store and asked to interview him. He said that Harlan made the decision to leave the business The concern that Major Holt had was that criminal associates might come in and see him talking to the police. And just to hone in on the questions that this court asked of Attorney Cook, I wanted to review page 35 of the transcript of the suppression hearing. My question was, whose decision was it to go to a location other than the store to conduct the interview? Answer, he requested to go somewhere else outside of the store, referring to Harlan. Did he tell you why he wanted to do that? Answer, he was also afraid that there would be people that would come into the store. So that is the testimony of Major Holt about why Mr. Harlan wanted to leave. And I think it's fairly implicit in there. It's not a quantum leap to suggest that, yeah, if, you know, DEA comes with a badge. We know what they're doing, what types of things they investigate, and that if he is going to cooperate, he doesn't want to be seen talking to the police in the store because another drug trafficking associate might see that. So Harlan Lee is also told that he would not go to jail and that he'd be returned to the location of his choice after he wanted to terminate the interview. That's another factual finding made by the district court. He then got into the SUV with three other police officers and drove to the residential neighborhood. And again, referring to the transcript, there are some questions asked of Attorney Cook about that. And on page 36, I had asked Detective Holt, did he ever mention or ask to use another vehicle? The answer is, I believe he asked the question when we exited the store and got on the parking lot what vehicle we were going to take, and I pointed out mine. I said, we can all fit in there, we will take mine. Question, did he object at all? No. So to me, it's, again, there's nothing coercive about that. It's not an absolute command, but it's not Detective Holt saying, well, we can take your vehicle or mine. It's somewhere in between the two of those. After he gets into the police vehicle, as the court has noted, they drive to a residential neighborhood. There's a statement that takes 45 minutes, the last 15 minutes of which constitute a confession. And then the police return Harlan to a location near his business. There was a location that Kenny Harlan chose. Now, this court in the Wyatt case that I cited has looked at seven factors in determining whether a custodial interrogation has occurred as opposed to a garden variety interrogation. First, whether the encounter occurred in a public place. The initial encounter occurred in a business that was open. It was during business hours. And then we go into a residential neighborhood. So it's not a police station or some coercive.
Don't you think it is coercive, though, in a squad car with somebody sitting next to them? They're, and two up in the front seat?
They were in an SUV. It was an unmarked car. It was not a squad car.
Three officers in there with them.
Well, to some degree, there's an environment where somebody might not be comfortable in that situation.
And might not want to walk out and feel that he's free to walk out.
But I don't think it's inherently coercive. And when he's told by the police, we'll return you to a location of your choice if you decide to terminate the interview, then it's absolutely not a coercive
setting. Was he told that you're free to leave at any time?
I had asked that question directly. He wasn't told you are free to leave at any time.
Was he told you're entitled to have an attorney?
No, he wasn't read his Miranda warnings or his right to an attorney. But
why was he denied the right to call his wife?
There's nothing in the record to explain
that. Why would
that.
You assume he was denied?
I would assume that because, can I comment on things that are outside the scope of the testimony? Okay. I would assume that the police are concerned that he might tell his wife that he's with the police, and his wife might tell other people who are drug traffickers that he's with the police. But In any event, I think when you are when somebody's told you will not go to jail and you will be returned to the location of your choice whenever you want to terminate the interview.
What do you mean you will not go to jail? You mean you won't go to jail now?
Right. There's no arrest warrant today, and you'll be returned to the location of your choice whenever you're free, whenever you want to terminate the interview. Okay. That's every bit as good, in my opinion, as you can go whenever you want. The second factor is whether the suspect consented to speak with the officers. The court made the factual finding that it did, that he did. Whether the officers informed the individual he was not under arrest and was free to leave, the district court took the position that I just took in response to questions of the court, that Detective Holt's explanation that we will return you to the location of your choice if you want to terminate the interview conveys that he is free to leave and free to terminate the interview. The fourth factor is whether he was moved to another area. Typically, this would not be something that's in the government's favor. In this case, it really is, because the fact that he was moved from the store to another place was at the request of Mr. Harlan, as the court credited Detective Holt's testimony. Fifth, whether there is a threatening presence of several officers and a display of weapons or physical force. Again, the district court found, and there was no controversy in this subject, that no threats were made, no weapons were displayed, no physical force was used or threatened. Six, whether the police deprived him of documents he needed to continue in his way. They didn't do that. And seventh, whether the officer's tone of voice was such that their request would likely be obeyed. Nothing into the record that indicated that the police used a tone of voice that was inappropriate or threatening. So in this case, all seven of those factors resolve themselves in the government's favor. And when that's the case, clearly it's not a custodial interrogation, and the Miranda warnings were
not. Is it in the government's favor that they tell them that if you do want to be interviewed in your store, we're going to lock all the doors so no one can come in or go out?
I don't think there's a Detective Holt didn't testify that we're going to lock all the doors to your store. Now, he had asked him after the decision was made to leave the store, Mr. Harlan locked the store. You know, he's the only one there. He doesn't want someone.
They didn't tell him they were going to lock the doors if he was going to be interviewed in the store so that no one could enter or leave?
That was not... I can look at the transcript again, but no, that wasn't said by Detective Holt in my recollection.
According to the district court's findings of fact, Harlan was given the option of speaking with the officers at KJ with the doors locked to prevent people from interrupting or to venture to another location.
What the transcript indicates in this case, in page 34, Detective Holt testified, I asked him if he wanted to close the shop up, if he was expecting other people. Of course, we had no control over customers just walking in. He did have some traffic of that nature. He said he probably should lock the door, and I made the suggestion to him we could either conduct the interview there or go somewhere else, and he decided to go somewhere else. So that's what the testimony was at the hearing. There wasn't any discussion in the testimony about we're definitely going to lock the door if we do the interview here.
That was just periphery, you think, after the officers?
Pardon?
You said that wasn't consequential when they talked about if you're here, we'll lock the doors, or otherwise we'll go in the SUV.
That's not something that was the subject of the discussion, that if you're here, we'll lock the doors. There's not a basis for that in the testimony.
Okay.
See the red light, so I don't have anything else.
Thank you, Mr. Blackington. How much time does Ms. Cook have? Thank you.
Well, apparently I have just almost exactly the same amount of time that Mr. Harlan spent with the three law enforcement officers who were in his store. And during that extremely brief period of time, the officers wandered around the store, looked at some of the items that were for sale, had a conversation with Mr. Harlan about business in the shop before they ever identified themselves as law enforcement officers. You know, I think that given the fact that there was such a brief period of time within the store, you have to credit the testimony that the officers basically said, you know, I'm with the Drug Enforcement Administration, I want to talk to you, you can either lock up the shop or you can go somewhere else. And that converts this otherwise public business to a pretty private place. And I don't think we can say that Mr. Harlan's encounter with law enforcement officers took place in a public area. Also, when he is moved within the SUV to the side of a residential neighborhood, he doesn't have any contact with anybody in that neighborhood, and he doesn't have any way simply of getting out of the SUV and leaving. I think it's perfectly reasonable for us to say that he did not believe that he was free to leave and that it was an inherently coercive environment, especially following the fact that he was told that he was the target of an investigation which had progressed to the point where he could expect to receive a 20-year prison sentence. The officers knew and capitalized on the coercive nature of this encounter. And so I see my time is up, unless someone has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Cook.
Thank you.
And Ms. Cook, again, we thank you for taking this case by appointment, and we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.